Could you retain social respectability if you had the kind of friends that Jesus had? Hello, this is Good Word, and I'm Dave Thomas, your host, once again with my conversation partners Brant Berglund and Daryl Bigger, colleagues from the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. We are talking this whole quarter, all 13 weeks, about restoration, how God is in the business of restoring what was lost, that life began with Eden, where it says it was very good, and then came sin, and now God is restoring what was lost. And this week, we're invited to look particularly at Jesus again, at how he mingled with people. And in making mention of that, I'm reminded of a curious accusation that was made of him, made of Jesus by the religious leaders, found in Luke 15, verses 1 and 2. There's a little conversation there, but it ends with them charging him by saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." And this is a put-down. This is a statement intended to demean and diminish Jesus. Why? He claims to be a religious person, but he welcomes sinners and eats with them. How terrible. So I'm wondering in my mind if maybe Daryl and Brant, we could reflect a little bit on this word of sinners. Who do you think the religious leaders had in mind when they used the word sinners?
Well, it would have been those who openly broke the Mosaic law, those who had reputations of perhaps prostitution, those who had outward sins that the Pharisees could have pointed to and says these people aren't godly.
Okay, so you think the measurement would have been primarily an external one? If you weren't living by the rules, you were a sinner? Any thoughts, Daryl, on who the sinners might be?
It's an ominous accusation, isn't it, to be branded by
especially
by
if
these
you're a
people.
Religious person.
Sure.
Why are you hanging out with sinners?
So the elevated people in society are labeling you as a kind of untouchable.
Yeah. Well, we see in John 9, the disciples asked Jesus about a man born blind. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So those who are unfortunate enough to have some sort of deformity, some sort of difficulty in life, would have been labeled sinners as well, because if you keep the law of God, obviously blessings come, according to the Proverbs.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the foundational assumption here is that if you hang out with sinners, you will become one.
Mm-hmm. And don't most human beings want to elevate their status in life, not diminish it? So that wouldn't be an attractive option.
But yeah, that's interesting. I guess my comment was driven primarily by the thought that this is particularly true of parents. You don't want your children to hang out with sinners because they might become like them. It's interesting to me that we never hang out with sinners hoping they will become like us, if I can use the word us and them, you know. Should we not teach our children to hang out with the proverbial sinners to help them see that there's another way of living? I don't know. We always seem to think it goes one way, and that's what I think they were saying of Jesus. He hangs out with sinners.
There would have been a sense of ritual defilement by being with sinners in that culture.
Yeah. Say a little bit about that. What do you mean by ritual defilement?
So the laws of the elders, the traditions of the elders that have been codified 100 years after the time of Jesus in the Talmud and the Mishnah and some of the rabbinic laws had some very strong distinguishing characteristics between those who were holy, those who were able to be in the presence of God, and those who could not. And sin defiled you in a way that made you, in a way, dirty, and you could pass that on to others by contact with them in association.
So therefore you are to avoid defilement, because the process of reestablishing purity was fairly prolonged, right?
It could have been. It could have been as long as a week or longer. But we find in the New Testament that this had to do with association. When Peter, for instance, in the book of Acts, refuses to eat with Gentiles, and he's given a dream about animals and says, "No, kill and eat these animals." And he says, "Look, I've never touched anything common or unclean." And God showed him it wasn't about animals. It was about people. These sinners are people you should be associating with.
They had taught themselves over a series of generations that bad things happened when they strayed from God. So their defilement was an indication that they weren't doing what God wanted, and they were trying to avoid the consequences, the punishment, if you will, the results of being alienated from God. That's an ominous thing. So their intention was not to reform society. It was to distinguish themselves from society so that it wouldn't mess them up.
But see, to play on the theme of restoration is that if you are participating in restoration, how do you not connect yourself somehow relationally to the people who need restoring?
Oh, and is not that not the whole point? So, Brandt, how did the Israelites at the time of Jesus perceive their mission as being God's redemptive power in the world?
We actually don't. The way I understand it is they didn't see it as being redemptive.
Sure.
It had more to do with preserving their own national and personal salvation and standing before God. It wasn't something to be inclusive and draw others into.
Yeah, see, that's a challenge for me to the whole Christian community today, because it's too easy for us to want to insulate ourselves from the rest of the world and preserve what we have instead of trying to transform the world.
And sometimes that reclusiveness is driven by a fear of being contaminated by sin, not in a ritual sense, but in an experiential sense. I don't want to hang out with people who smoke and drink and whatever other sins you want to characterize or describe. And yet, I go back to my question. Here, Jesus is mingling with known sinners.
Yes.
His reputation even comes to be known as a glutton and a drunkard, and he contrasts his experience with John the Baptist, saying, John the Baptist came in the wilderness, and he tried to preach to you one way, you didn't listen to him, I come another way, hanging out with people that you wouldn't associate with, and you call me a sinner as well. Neither John or Jesus can win. The Jews of Jesus' day simply wouldn't listen.
Yeah, and they are actually they are all of us, actually. You know, I wonder how often we listen to injunctions that take us out of our little communities and safe zones to mingle with, and I use my fingers as quotation marks, with sinners, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to say something, Darrell.
Well, I'm keying on what the two of you are saying, that the people who saw themselves as insulated from defilement were among those who needed the reclamation.
Yeah.
And they didn't recognize that for themselves.
And what then happens? What do you think happened when Jesus associated with the sinners? What's the restorative value of that? What's the effect?
We might use the story of Zacchaeus towards the end of the book of Luke as an example here. Jesus comes and eats with him after Zacchaeus comes down out of the tree to get a glimpse of Jesus. And Zacchaeus tells Jesus, look, all that I have, I'm going to begin giving back if I've wronged anybody. But the way the Greek suggests is he's already begun to do some of these work of we might call it restitution, long before Jesus got there.
And by the way, the tax collectors in that era had very justly earned reputations as being shysters, because they were like subcontractors, I understand it, that the Romans wanted a certain amount of tax money, but whatever else they collected, they kept for themselves. And so some of them were very, very wealthy, because they extorted this based on authority of government, and if you didn't pay. But there was no checks and balances on overpayment, and it seems like Zacchaeus was at one point involved in that. So I've often thought, what kind of person would do that?
Well, and couple that with the fact that he's working for Rome, who were oppressing Israel, that made him doubly guilty.
But it's kind of like a town I heard that didn't have enough money to pay a policeman, and I think it was in a little rural area, and so they told him he could earn his living by whatever tickets he gave. And there was a state highway that went through there, and he would sit by the school sign and catch people, and it was $75 fines in those days for exceeding the 20-mile-hour speed limit, and he made a pretty good living. But having established the rule, nobody found a way to balance it. But the policeman became known as being somebody who took more than he should have, and most of it was from passers-by, by the way. So.
This is, for me, an intimidating method that Jesus is using here. In political terms, I suppose we could refer to him as a populist rather than identifying with the insiders. He's going to identify with the marginalized people. And that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
because it rattles those of us who claim to be inside the sheepfold, if you will.
Yeah.
We're not the lost ones out there.
Yeah.
We're safe.
We should mention Luke 15 and those three famous parables, the lost coin, the lost sheep, and the lost son.
Or lost sons, I like saying.
Oh,
plural. Sons, plural. They both seem to be lost in different ways.
And actually, we missed the fact that that third parable, the lost son, was not really about the prodigal son as much as it was about the son who remained doing what was right and the attitude that he manifested when his son came back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, any comments on those three parables that you want to share here in our closing minutes?
You devote huge amount of attention to a minority group who's outside the safety of things.
Yeah, I guess I've never been moved much by the lost coin because it's only a coin. But the woman was very happy to get that. And if that's a projection of God, and his reaction, I think it's a great parable. The lost sheep, there's all kinds of stuff and pictures written about that. I think we very quickly gravitate toward the lost son. And I know I've spoken publicly about that parable, and it can easily reduce me to tears in that moment where it says that the father, when that boy was far off, the father recognized him. And I often wonder to myself, how did he know that? Was it his son's walk? And he ran out to meet him.
He's watching for him.
Yeah, he's watching for him.
Yeah.
An undignified response.
No.
Running like a gleeful child.
Picking up his robe, skirt.
Yes. In those last two cases, those who were safe were highly offended at what was happening.
Why did you leave your 99 sheep?
Exactly. Are we of no value here? Why aren't you paying attention to us?
And yet Jesus' words ring true again. The Son of Man has come to seek and to save the lost. It is not to call the righteous but the sinners to repentance. So there has to be a sense in which I recognize my own need of restoration to really hear Jesus' message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I we're running out of time here, but I've also wondered why sinners are so disliked by the, quote, righteous people. You know, is it because the sinners are bad or because the righteous don't want to get involved? We don't have time to answer that question here, but a very interesting one, that Jesus mingled with people. He understood something that we need to understand, that if you don't associate with people, you're going to have very little effect on their lives and the process of restoring their lives. And if you're going to get involved with people who are socially different from you, it is a measure of inconvenience and discomfort. So anyway, thank you, Darrell and Brant, for a good conversation again this week. My thanks to David Olson, our engineer, and also my continued thanks to those of you who listen to The Good Word. For The Good Word, I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.